Godlywood Studios presents Brahmakumari's podcast. सुनते रहिए दिल से दिल तक पॉडकास्ट विद अभिनंदन जिंदल.
It's been like 25 years that you have been staying in Mount Abu.
I think it more 28, 29 years. First time in 86, I would stay an extra couple of weeks in Madaban, mm-hmm. and show the artists how to use this airbrush.
So now, like, do you miss your country?
No, I don't miss. I mean, Australia's Australia. There's certain things here, but the internal feeling was like I was feeling at home.
Your family supported you? Or?
Yeah, so my father was very liberal. He was a sailor at some point. He was also a chef, okay. A cook on the ship. And my experience of that is I had the experience of this subtle body come into me.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
You were paralyzed.
Like, for that time that was there, and then it jumped out, and then it jumped in again, and I sat up. I didn't know what was happening.
तो दिल से दिल तक एक नए एपिसोड में आप सबका स्वागत है. उम्मीद करता हूँ कि आप सब बहुत अच्छे होंगे. और आज हमारे साथ हैं डेविड भाई जी, जो बेसिकली बिलोंग करते हैं ऑस्ट्रेलिया से, और 25 सालों से वो ब्रह्मकुमारी मधुबन में है, जो कि अपनी बहुत खूबसूरत पेंटिंग्स के लिए जाने जाते हैं, मेडिटेशन की म्यूज़िक के लिए जाने जाते हैं. तो चलिए जानते हैं उनकी जर्नी, उनके 25 सालों का सफ़र. हाय.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
So, it's been like 25 years that you have been staying in Mount Abu, Madhuban, Brahmakumari.
Yeah, I think it more 28, 29 years.
29
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
How was it?
How was it? It's been very good. Mount Abu is a very beautiful place.
Yeah, it is.
And actually, when I first started my journey, spiritual journey, was in a place which was very similar terrain okay. as Mount Abu. So this type of granite rock, palm trees and things like this. So it reminded me a lot of where I started this okay. journey. And I came to Mount Abu first time was 86.
My
first trip to Mount Abu was 86. And that was at the campus of Pandabhavan.
Brahmakumari
is the first campus there. And then after nearly 12 years, then Gyan Sarovar, that campus started. And I came there primarily, of course, it was for refreshment, spiritual refreshment, but also my specialty was with a spray paint, airbrush work. So that was something very new for India here, especially for the artists here. And that was the specialty of the spray painters. You can render these colors very gradually and seamlessly with a spray. So they really liked it. So every time I'd visit from that time, first time in 86, I would stay an extra couple of weeks in Madaban, and show the artists how to use this airbrush. Okay. So that kept me longer time than
so
most.
So you had been called or you came by your own?
Well, in those days, the foreigners used to come for refreshment every year.
Okay.
But they'd come for 4 weeks or something.
Okay.
But I'd stay probably 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Because I was doing some seva.
Okay.
And they would say, okay, you can stay longer. And it just happened very organically. It was not planned, or I just made myself free.
With the flow.
Yeah.
So now, like, do you miss your country?
No, I don't miss. I mean, No, it's like, you know, I've always had the feeling when I go somewhere that if I go somewhere, I take everything that I'm using for my whatever's talents or specialties. I try to have that wherever I go. So, you know, it's like one of these things where, you know, if we travel somewhere and people say, where's home? Where's your home? Yeah. Most of the time we say, our home place is somewhere where we have all our facilities, we're comfortable, there's nothing missing like that. If we're not at home, then we feel something is missing.
No? Yeah.
So I used to always feel that when I come here, I felt at home here. So it wasn't a question of, okay, Australia's Australia, there's certain things here, but the internal feeling was like I was feeling at home.
Here. You're feeling filled within.
Yeah, at home, and all the things I needed or I... whatever wanted were all already here.
Available then.
Yeah. And because my background also, because I'd traveled a lot, I'd spent time in the outback in Australia, so I'd lived very, very simply, almost like village life in India.
Please tell those things in bit more detail. How did you start? I mean, your family supported you, or is it a normal culture like all of us, all the Indians know about this thing that the people who are from Western culture, parents support them at a very early age. They're allowed to go outside and do everything on your own, on their own.
Yes.
So is it true? And how was your experience? How was your journey? And then after that, I ask you about Brahmakumari.
Yeah. Okay. So my father was very liberal. He was a sailor at some point. He was also a chef, a cook on the ship. And he traveled a lot when he was younger. So he saw travel as the best education. And he was very supportive of that. So as I was finishing my apprenticeship as a carpenter, I had a dream of traveling around Australia as a working holiday. So that means I had one of these tempo traveler vans, the big van, and I'd fit it out.
And at what age did you start?
That age, by the time I was 20, I was ready to go to travel. 16 to 19.
Okay.
It was 4 years apprenticeship. And as soon as that apprenticeship finished, I'd already fitted out my mobile home and I was ready to travel around Australia. I had a vehicle, a trailer, boat, surfboard, tent.
Everything on your own.
Generator, everything.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I left to travel around Australia and I headed from South Australia to Perth, to Western Australia. And then I went up to the northwest of Western Australia.
Okay.
And Western Australia, actually the size of Western Australia is the size of India, one state.
Size
of India. Yeah. So
that means Australia is a very big country.
Yeah, land mass is very big. Yeah. Population is small in comparative to India. I think it's 26 million now.
Okay.
When I was there, it was probably... that time was probably 17 million. And Western Australia only had 1.5 million people.
Okay.
So it's like imagining all of India just 1.5 million people.
Just in one state.
And mostly in one city too. In the country, very few.
Oh.
So when I went to that state and I traveled in the north, which is a very hot climate, like super hot, like in the summer for... Where I traveled to was one of the hottest places in the world. It was nearly 300 days was over 37 degrees temperature.
37 degrees.
Over, for more than 300 days. So, and that was inland, but where I was on the coast, but still it was very hot climate. So I traveled to this place around us, and when I got to Perth and I went up to the northwest, Western Australia, I got good work as a carpenter, and then I come across this town called Broome. And Broome was famous for the moti, you know, the pearl? The pearl? They used to dive for these pearls
in that
town on the coast. So that town was very influenced by Asian influence. It had Chinese there, Malay, Filipino, Japanese. They were all the specialists at diving for these pearls, and they came to Australia in the early 19th century, and that town was like booming. It had 350 boats specially designed for this pearl diving.
Okay.
They call the pearling luggers.
Okay.
And that was famous for pearls all around the world. That town was famous. So when I got to this place, it was so different to anywhere I'd seen in Australia because people were wearing this lungi. You know, like in Australia, we don't wear longies, but in that town, because of the influence of the Asian influence, people had this dress, and I first got introduced to that in this town. So before long, I was also wearing a lungi. I thought, this is great. You can make a hat, you can make a bag, you can make a bed sheet, so many practical, you know. And but not just that, it was very... you could say it was very simple in the sense of you just needed your shelter, food, water, things like this. And then I got an invitation actually to a sacred site of the Aboriginal people.
Okay.
And, you know, in the Aboriginal people in Australia, that anywhere where there's water, it's considered a sacred site because it gives life, the water, fresh water.
Okay.
And in this part of Australia where I traveled up to, there was very, very little fresh water like that along the coastline.
Okay.
And so I got an invitation to this place by a person who was living right out in the outback. And I was also interested in exploring new areas of land where no one else had been, that type of adventure. And not just that, but 1 year before that, this was 1982 that I went up into this place, but in 81, actually I had an experience. I was called up for initiation into Aboriginal law.
Okay.
And their law is not L-A-W, it's L-O-R-E.
L-O-R-E.
Their spiritual law. And part of their spiritual law is, one of the initiation steps is to go out into the forest.
Okay.
And spend a long length of time there.
Okay.
Because they understood that if you went into the nature like that, you have to face all the nature, the animals, the insects, and how to live out in that sort of wilderness and still be, like, have a good stage or not be influenced by that. And so in 81, I had the experience of that. And that's a very, an experience of that is like, it's very, it could be spooky for a lot of people, but they send out the astral body, astral body, project out the astral body, and they find who's ready to go into that initiation. So it's like a spirit they send out.
Okay.
It's like a subtle body.
Okay.
And they look for the young boys, because it's usually the young boys that go into initiation, and they see who's ready, and then they connect with them.
Okay.
And then, and my experience of that is I had the experience of this subtle body come into me.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. And it was very scary at the time because I didn't know what was happening, but I was in an Aboriginal's house. My friend's partner was an Aboriginal girl, and I was sleeping in the hallway of this place, and this spirit come into me, and I was like paralyzed. I couldn't move.
You were paralyzed?
Like, I, for that time that was there, and then it jumped out, and then it jumped in again, and I sat up. I didn't know what was happening, and then the next...
How much time did this thing happen?
Not long, just over a few minutes.
Okay.
But the next morning when I shared this experience with the Aboriginal girl there, when she went out of the house in the morning, there was a goanna on the back doorstep. You know the goannas, the lizard?
Okay.
Australian lizard, they grow up to 6 feet long. Mm. So one of these, like 3 feet or something long, was on the back doorstep in the morning. Mm. And, you know, the Aboriginal people, they connect everything with signs and symbols. You can imagine if you're living out in the wilderness, you don't have signs saying 3 kilometers water hole, 4 kilometers kangaroos. You have to read all the signs in the nature of where things are, and all this. So they have acute observation skills in that, because their life is that they have to live in the land. They have to see where things are. They know, like, for example,
the animals you're talking about,
their survival. I mean, part of their survival was hunting, of course. They hunted animals, kangaroos and this, but they also were hunters and gatherers of seeds and all this, but it means that when they're in that environment, all their world is to do with signs. And, for example, if you had the thought water, and straight away having that thought, say you see a bird fly that way, that's where the water is.
Seriously?
Because there, the thought is connected to the needs, and what's something in the visual picture will show you where that is. That's how they live. Yeah. It's very natural for them. For us, wow, you think, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, like
you
have that's a thought. Really amazing. You know? Yeah.
So when I shared this experience with this Aboriginal girl, when she saw that goanna lizard is associated with the spirit.
Okay.
And when I said, and she knew the time of year that the tribal elders would send out the spirits to round up people who are ready for that initiation into their law.
Hmm.
And she said, you're being called up for initiation. And I thought, I didn't say, but inside I thought, well, I'm not Aboriginal, you know. But the next year when I got this invitation to this place up in the Kimberley on this freshwater spring, that was a sacred site of the Indigenous people.
Okay.
And I didn't connect all this at the time, but later I realized what had happened. And of course, when I went up there, it was like a paradise. It was this beautiful fresh water coming out of the ground.
So you were the chosen one, basically.
Well, it was, for my experience there, was wonderful. But it's like I could hear the spring. The spring would come out of the ground. You couldn't see because it was all ferns and brackens, but it ran about a quarter of a mile and waterfalled into the ocean, this beautiful freshwater spring. And when I got to this place, it was so beautiful and pristine. Very few people had been to this place. There was three other people living there that I knew.
Just three?
Three people, yeah. And then I was exploring and I found this spot on the side of the cliff, cliff face, overlooking the ocean and the bay. And I saw how I could build a place out from the cliff face with the trees that were in the forest. So in a short space of time, I think it was just over a week, I built my whole place in just a week. Okay. And I used to cut the trees in the forest, the dead trees, and drag them up the side of the cliff. And I suspended the platform out from the cliff. And the doorway, you come through the floor, up through the floor. So I lived in that place for nearly 1 year like that. Okay. And in that 1 year, I had just 10 visitors in 1 year. 10 different people arrived at that place.
Okay.
It was very difficult to get to. It was 2 days by boat to get to this place. 2 days journey by boat.
Okay.
And there was nothing there. There was, in those days, no radio, no TV, no cell phone,
no
nothing.
Source of entertainment. No source of entertainment.
Well, entertainment was the nature.
Nature, yeah.
But in those days, of course, when those visitors arrived, the first visitor arrived after 4.5 months.
Okay.
When I was there. And, you know, the person who invited me there, he used to say, when you go out to a place like this, it takes at least 6 weeks for you to be in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally.
Mentally.
Because you still have thoughts of the town, the village in your mind and this and this. And when you go to that, like in the outback, when you go to a place like that, it takes time before you can really settle and be there. So his experience was like it would take him about 6 weeks be there.
And how was your experience with the visitor?
Well, it was like the first thing the visitors would say, what do you do here?
Okay.
Because it's just the nature.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, they would say, what happens if something happens? If you get bit by a snake or you have an accident, it's 2 days' journey to the town. And you could do that journey only twice a month with the right tides, the ocean tides.
Okay.
But my experience was like, it was the first time I really experienced the simple aspect of being, you know, because in the West also, a lot of emphasis always doing, yeah? You have to be doing something always.
Mm-hmm.
The being part.
What's missing?
Is
was never thought
you
about.
Only have the weekend, you can get some glimpse of being. You know, if you're working all week, you're working a job, so you're doing. Then on the weekend, you have some time off. You may do some things around the house. This is general sort of thing.
Or you
and then you have a certain little bit of time where you can just be.
Mm.
And for me, this place was like it forced you into that aspect of being.
Mm-hmm.
Because doing means what I needed to do was for my survival. Mm. I built shelter.
Mm.
Water was from the spring.
Mm.
And food. Very simple. Mm. Your food, water, food, and shelter. So outside of that was just exploring, exploring the area and just being.
And you stayed there for a year.
For 1 year, yeah. So when I observed all the nature, because part of this experience and coming back to that Aboriginal law.
You always knew that you are in the center of a danger zone. But the main thing was how to survive, how to be alert all the time, 24/7.
Yeah.
You cannot just be thinking about, oh my God, there are snakes, there are crocodiles, there are sharks.
Yeah.
If you are thinking about all those things, then how would you be able to survive?
Yeah.
You have to be in the present. You have to think about that. My current scenario is that I'm in the center of all the animals. Oh, I am surrounded by all the animals.
Mm.
And whenever, whatever situation comes, I will fight it.
Yeah.
We have to be in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such a beautiful thing which you took.
Yeah. So that was very, that pushed you into that, you know. So it was very, and of course, that was the aspect of being as well. When I say being, it's like being is just being the observer, just observing. And I observed all the animals and that had come around. And I used to love, you know, because if you're really still and quiet and not afraid, the animals would come around, you know, because they would pick up that vibration that you're not afraid.
Okay.
So the snakes would come in the house. There was marsupial cats, these quail, they call them. Wallabies
and
used to come.
They would never harm you?
No.
If you're not scared?
Most of the time, most of the animals are not going to harm you.
Oh.
The crocodiles, okay, yes.
Okay.
So when you went down to the coast, you had to be very aware that I didn't see them when I was there, but there was two big crocodiles in that bay.
Okay.
And the crocodiles are very predictable in the sense they want to see something in a similar pattern all the time. So if they saw you coming down to the coast and they were watching and you come down the same way day after day, then that would be the time they would plan to.
Oh.
So the people who were there, the three other people.
So they are basically hunters.
Yeah, they would say to him, the other people would say to me, if you go down to the coast, always take something different with you. Take a stick, maybe then time a piece of cloth, a colored cloth or something. So the crocodile would try to, you know, when they see something different, they refrain.
Off.
Yeah, they're not sure, so they just watch and wait.
Okay.
Fortunately, nothing ever happened with a crocodile like that, but means it pushed you into that extra alertness because it was for your survival too.
Survival, yeah.
You have to be, you know. So, and that's that part of it I loved in that sense there because it really was a, like you were saying, you know, when we're really present and in the moment, in the nature like this pushes you into that like any other animal. They're always in the moment and they're, you deal with what happens at that time, but you're not premeditating something. Oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? And, of course, many people that visited, in those 10 people, they would say that. They would say, what happens if this? But I didn't think of that.
Because
if it happened, actually I had a little bottle of mercurochrome. It's like this solution. If you get cuts, it stops it getting infected.
Okay.
That's all I used there. I just had a little bottle of that. That was my medical kit, you know.
Okay.
And so, but I didn't entertain that in my mind.
Then you won't be focusing on what to do. You will be just focusing, oh my God, if this thing happens, then what will happen?
Because sometimes in life we don't do something because we think, oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? And we don't.
All we can do is that we have to be ready with all the precautions and the cautions that we can, you know, we can be taking care of. And we have to be ready for every situation. But we can't be thinking about that situation again and again because our mind has to be free, you know.
Yes.
So this is a beautiful thing,
And then after when I finished building this place out of the trees from the forest and I was living there, it wasn't long after that that the person who invited me there, he was very, very disciplined with his food and diet because to get to this place was very difficult. Okay. And when you come in the boat, you were limited what you could take because you had to take water, you had to take fuel to get there and back.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2 days by boat, so you had to take enough fuel to get there and back, then water and of course extra in case anything happens that you're delayed or some problem with the motor or whatever. So, but his discipline was something I didn't have at that point. And especially it was with the food because I'd bought food items in the boat, supplies for there. And I thought I was only staying for 1 week, but I ended up staying 1 year.
1 year,
But because I had that lack of discipline, I saw that discipline in this other person, and of course that's what I wanted. I wanted to be disciplined like that, you see, because generally we want what we want is what we haven't got. If we have that, then we don't want it. So I saw that in him, and of course what had happened then, I painted this picture like a little bit like the Taj Mahal. It was shaped like the Taj Mahal. It was a temple in a space background, night sky, and had stars and planets. And I had this out of this temple. Front of this temple had five doorways, and those five doorways was I had put rainbow colors coming to a star in space. And that was the influence by this hermit who'd lived there, and he said the main aim of this game is to master the five senses.
To master
your five senses. And of course I saw that he was really disciplined with especially with taste, that sense of taste. And of course, I didn't have that myself, so I was admiring Knapp in his discipline with his food, and he'd ration out his supplies, and he was very, and when I got there, of course, I was all the tasty stuff I finished quickly, and sometimes overindulge in this. And of course, I experienced when I overindulge in something, there was some lack of clarity or perception was dampened, you know. And I knew that, okay, if you master this, then there's something extra special in that. And then when I painted this picture and I put it about 3 meters in front of me, there's a very clear picture of somebody sitting in meditation in the middle of that temple. And I didn't paint anyone in the temple. I just painted the temple.
Okay.
And this very clear image of this person sitting in cross-legged position, half lotus position. I could see with white hair, white mustache. And I was getting the experience every time I had my food and I had even one mouthful more than I needed, I'd get some sort of pinprick or something would happen, would show me that that's outside this law.
You should not be eating this.
Not that I shouldn't be eating it, but when I'd had enough, so what the body that's needed, enough. That was the time to stop. You know, it's not, you know, sometimes I hear you say, oh, just for taste. You've had enough. Somebody comes and says, oh, have one of these just for taste. And you think, no, I'm full. No, have just for taste. So you have it. And then you feel, oh, I've had too much. I didn't, you know. So this type of experience went on for some weeks. You know, every time I'd have one mouthful more food than what I didn't need, I'd get a very clear indication of that. So, and I was connecting that with that person in the middle of this temple. Who was this person that appeared in this temple? Because I just painted the temple, but in the brush marks, it was like an image of somebody sitting in the temple.
So, but you did not paint it by yourself.
I painted it, but consciously.
The person. Yeah. No. Not consciously, yeah.
It was like if you paint a wall with one color, and then you go over with a dark color, and you can still see the color underneath. That was like an image of somebody underneath of that sitting in that temple. So, and of course,
after you just painted everything, then you saw that I can see somebody sitting in the middle of the temple.
Yeah.
But you did not paint it consciously.
No.
Oh.
No. So then it wasn't long after that. It was a full moon, and you know, in the outback, when you ride out, and the same in India, if you're out in a village life, there's no electricity, no lights, you see the stars and very clearly. So this one full moon that was like the full moon was above my head, and I was looking at the other side of the valley, and there was this one rock, because that Kimberley area is all rock. Mm-hmm. There's no flat ground.
Mm-hmm.
One rock was glowing like a light, lit up. Mm-hmm. And I was staring at this rock, and I was thinking, wow, that's amazing. This one rock is like glowing. And then and I pulled back the roof of the house, and the full moon was above my head. I could just see the in my vision the full moon, and there was this experience of the light coming from this glowing rock and the light from the moon, and then I had this experience myself as soul, as a point of light also. And it was like all these experiences, like being immortal, eternal, no beginning, no end, like this whole feeling of the self being immortal. And I was so intoxicated with this, like I was just, it was just like mind-blowing almost to think, okay, I exist forever and this whole thing. And then the next day when I climbed up, I thought I had to go up to this rock to see what this rock was all about, because it was quite some distance, maybe 150 meters. And then when I got up to this rock, it was a very flat surface on the rock, and it must have been just that 45-degree angle from the moonlight reflecting across to where I was sitting, the other side of the valley.
Yeah.
So I realized it was just a reflection. It must mean a reflection of the moon. So I painted this face of this rock with a blue dot and a red circle around it, and that became my evening meditation. I used to sit and stare at this target-like sign, and of course I was having thoughts of myself as this image of light, as a point of light, as a image of
nobody
light.
Taught you or told you about this.
No. So, and that was a wonderful experience of that. So I used to sit in the evening time and have that meditation with that. And then it was probably...
You started meditation just like that?
Yeah.
Not with any...
No. Well, actually, I read Paramahansa Yogananda, this autobiography of a yogi. I read that book there. So that was also a big awakening, because it was like my first read of anything from the East, and there was wonderful stories in that. Of he was a He came to the West to teach meditation in US. I think Self-Realization Fellowship started that. But and I always thought actually the person in that temple was maybe one of these people that was in that book, because there was many photographs in that book of old saints and sages and that. And of course, no one in that book looked like that in the picture. But then after probably 7-8 months, I thought, this is good.
Mm.
But how to be amongst people and have this same state, you know, because already I was experiencing, you know, like very much connected with the nature, the animals, and I really loved it there. But then there was a feeling, okay, it's really in the middle of nowhere. Mm. There's no one else around. And, of course, in that type of situation, you're dealing with your thoughts.
Mm.
And you have to deal with the nature. That's your biggest challenge in that situation, not other people as such.
Mm.
And so then I thought, okay, I come back to this small village where I left from.
Yeah.
And I come back there and I said to the government, I got very inspired to paint from that experience.
Okay.
And also the other thing was with sound, which I do with music, was like the feeling with sound was like how to use sound to create silence. Oh. That was the sort of feeling I got from there. Okay. Because it was so silent there. There was only one engine a day which you'd hear, and that was the surveillance plane. Okay. Coastal surveillance would go past the coast.
Oh.
And you could hear that for at least 7 miles away coming.
Okay.
It was so clear, the sound, you know. And so the feeling I was having there also that somehow truth was within silence.
Mm-hmm.
I felt this divine presence in that space of silence. And I really felt that was like if I surrendered to that silence, that everything I needed would be taken care of. That was the feeling.
Beautiful.
And of course, after that, coming back in from that place, I was gifted many instruments. I was gifted a sitar, tabla, dulcimer, a silver flute. Mm. In the first year coming back, people would just gift me these instruments. So I used to play them. And the government supported me for me painting my experience of that 1 year. Because I said to them, I'm not interested in carpentry.
Mm.
Because, you know, in foreign we get, those days you, and still today, you get unemployment benefits if you don't have work.
Okay.
That will give you support, payment, until you get a job.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. So I went into that office and I said, I'm not interested in carpentry. I want to paint my experience of this 1 year. I'm living way out of town on a property alongside the beach.
Mm.
It was very difficult to come into the town.
Mm.
And I said, can I still get these payment if I'm doing that? And they said, yes. So so every fortnight I used to come into that village, get some payment, buy some vegetables, food supplies, then go back out to this property and I'd paint.
Okay.
And I started with this airbrush because I wanted to use the spray. So I used to pump up this cylinder with air by hand with a car pump, hand pump, a cylinder, copper cylinder, where they put a little valve on it and a gauge. And I used to paint just on with ink and paper and ink with a spray. And so I started painting my experience of that 1 year. So I painted many images of light on the pictures I'd paint, this point of light. And it was after a year and a half that town had a big festival for the pearl. And the town would go from 5,000 people up to 25,000 people in this festival time. And so they said to me, you're an up-and-coming artist. You can submit some pictures in this exhibition for this festival. And I had 8 pictures I had with me I'd painted. And one was this big one of this big 8-pointed star on the edge of the planet. And I put that one in. That was one of the 8. And that won the first prize for the exhibition, this point of light. And at the same time, one BK used to visit that village. Okay. And he come on the property I was staying and saw that picture. And he said, you know what you're painted? He said, this is a picture of Atma, Paramatma, Parampita.
Ooh.
And then I started sharing my experience from that 1 year in the forest. And it all collaborated together. It was what I experienced.
Oh, so that's how you got connected with Brahmakumaris.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it was like I already had the experience before I got the knowledge of Brahmakumari. So, of course, if you already have the experience, experience is experience. You know, there's no, you can't deny experience, no.
So you came to India in which year?
First year was 86. And I started this Raj Yoga in 84.
84.
September 84. Okay. So towards the end, yeah. So those days you had to at least follow all the principles of this knowledge for at least 12 months before you came.
So do you follow all the, like, not follow, to be precise, I mean, do you believe in all the teachings of Brahmakumaris and the people, like the senior Didis and Bhaijis, whatever they say about, you know, to all the people, and do you believe on in all such protocols?
Well, the thing is, when one has experience of things, it's like, you know, in this knowledge, it's like a journey for each one is different, each soul is different, and each soul has their own part to play in this. And of course, the aim is to become self-mastery within that, so, or self-sovereign. So it's all number-wise, you know, everyone is different. Even seniors, juniors, everyone's different. It's not like fixed in that sense. So one day you could be like this, maybe the next day you're like that. But there's an acceptance of that as well. That part of the rosary and understanding that anyone can be affected at any time. So when there's that deep understanding of that, then there's acceptance of, okay, senior, junior, whatever, we're all still on that same journey. So there's, and of course, in a realistic way as well, then you're not influenced. Otherwise, it's like when I first come to India first, when you're very new and inexperienced, they say sometimes you have rose glasses on there, rose-colored glasses where you see you don't see anything, any weakness, any defect, you're just flying, you know?
Same thing happened with me as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing happened. So that is what I'm asking you, like the youth basically, you know, they are very much vulnerable.
Yeah.
They're not very much familiar with all the things which we know with experience, with time, you know? Be it any religion, all the public figures and all the people who are saying that we are God and, you know, God is saying this, you have to follow this thing. Do you think that we should trust them, or we should be going on our own instincts?
Well, it's like, I mean, I guess if we understand, I mean, you know, I guess spirituality in a sense is different to religion, in a sense. It's like spirituality is open, like you could say here, for example, in Brahmakumaris, we accept ourselves as soul.
So
everyone is a soul.
Yeah.
If you're born into a religion, that is one thing.
Yeah.
You're born into that.
Yeah.
Now, born into something is one thing, but, you know, like the spirituality is beyond that as well. Yeah. It's not just what you're born into.
Yeah.
It's an acceptance of everyone as they are, as a soul, and playing a different part. Mm. And if you're born into this religion, you know, when you said to me earlier, oh, you're from Australia, but I'm not really from Australia.
Yeah.
I'm born in Australia, but I'm from the same place as all souls. We say soul world.
Yeah.
I come into Australia, born in Australia, I play these parts, these different roles, but the soul is still separate.
Separate.
So when we have that vision, then we accept all religions, all cultures, all colors, and there's a more of a universal outlook to that. And of course, our own spiritual journey is within that, because we know that whatever weaknesses I have, they're the things that cause me sorrow. And we, you know, if you have a bad habit, you think, I want to give this habit up because I know I experience some sort of suffering through that. Yeah, some bad habit, say, for example. And then I don't have the courage to do that. And then I do it again.
Yeah.
And I think, I know that's wrong. People are telling me that's wrong. I know that's wrong myself, but how I give that up?
Yeah.
You know, I don't have the power, maybe. It keeps coming back again and again. And then maybe somebody says something, shares some knowledge or something, or say in this case we connect in meditation to that supreme source, and then I find that, wow, all of a sudden that old samskara doesn't affect me anymore.
Yeah.
Or I become control of that. So then I think, wow, well, this is the first time maybe I'm having that control of that and able to do that. And then so that pushes me further and further into this, because then I think, wow, I've always wanted that self-mastery, and now when you start to become that, you're being liberated as well.
Yeah. So for that, proper guidance is a must.
Of course.
It's a must.
Yeah.
And we have to be very much cautious and selective.
Yeah, and of course, experience is the thing that's what gives us time. Because if you go to so many things that are false all the time, you think, well, that's, you know,
what's you get mixed up.
Yeah, you mix. So you look for something else, you know, and then something else. I used to think before I started this, I used to see all the religions. I connected with some of them. They'd come to me, and when they'd say the certain things of religion, I'd think, okay, but then if I didn't see that person was living that mm-hmm. practically, mm-hmm. then I'd think, well, what is that? Mm-hmm. If you're saying this,
yeah.
but you're doing that,
yeah.
then what's, you know, okay, is it just a fundamental belief?
Yeah. It's all commercialized, basically.
Well, commercialized, and also, you know, to really be a human being with all virtues and all qualities,
yeah.
to always be peaceful, always be happy, always be content, always be giving, sharing, caring, all these qualities is not a small thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, cool. you know, like, and of course, here in the sense of Brahma Kumaris, of course, Supreme Soul's teaching us, he's a Supreme Soul, and we're connecting to that source, so then we're becoming like that. And that's all the remembrance of that Supreme Source, is that is loving, is caring, is no discrimination, accepting of everyone, everything, all of these things. So naturally, if we connect, then we become like that. So then practically it's a...
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the journey, you know, like we all connect differently.
Yeah.
And as much as we want is there to take, you know, so as much as we understand that and serious with that, then we're likewise. But then also understanding that things do happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, okay, if you fall over as a child, get up and keep going, you know.
Yeah.
Not to give up.
Well, it was really nice talking to you.
You too.
And I really wish that you, you know, you become an inspiration for all the people and keep doing the same thing which I've been doing for the last so many years. And after listening to you, definitely for me also and for all the people who are listening to you right now, they will definitely get inspired by you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
तो आज था हमारा दिल से दिल तक का बहुत ही इंटरेस्टिंग एपिसोड डेविड भाई जी के साथ. मुझे पर्सनली बहुत अच्छा लगा, बहुत सीखने को मिला, क्योंकि जो भी इन्होंने बातें कही वो बहुत प्रैक्टिकल बातें कही. और जो एक चीज़ मैंने पर्सनली फील की कि आपको किसी भी चीज़ के ऊपर या किसी भी इंसान के ऊपर ऐसे बिलीव नहीं करना चाहिए. आपको खुद पहले देखना चाहिए कि जो इंसान मुझे कुछ कहने की कोशिश कर रहा है, क्या प्रैक्टिकली वो भी ये लाइफ ऐसी जी रहा है, क्या वो चीज़ कर रहा है जो वो मुझे करने के लिए बोल रहा है. सो ये एक बहुत ही, और जिस तरह से उन्होंने अपनी लाइफ स्टार्ट की, अकेले रहे एक ऐसी जगह पे जहाँ पे उनके साथ कोई भी नहीं था, सिर्फ नेचर थी और एनिमल्स के बीच में रहते थे, उनकी लाइफ को खतरा भी था, और कैसे उन्होंने लाइट के साथ कनेक्ट किया, फिर ब्रह्म कुमारी जाए, इंडिया में 25 सालों से रह रहे. सो ब्यूटिफुल ब्यूटिफुल. थैंक यू सो मच.